we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You know the drill. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, but right here on the radio, we're right here for you to answer your questions on any legal subject. Doesn't matter if it's real estate, doesn't matter if it's divorce, could be wills, could be injury subjects, could be insurance coverages. We're here. Telephone number 303-713-8255. 713-8255. And we got a new feature today we're trying out just to enhance our product and our service to you. And I'll cover it again later in the show. But also our new feature is you can give us a live question and answer if you want to on the internet. We've got it all set up. And so what you need to do is go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and you'll see a live Q&A button there. You'll hit the button, and you'll follow the prompts. And you can send us a question if you want to. If you don't want to call and be live on the air, you can do it that way. So 303-713-8255. And, you know, Brad and I just did a show this week that's going to air tomorrow morning and then next week on a variety of stations in the mountains, but a variety of stations tomorrow morning. And it covered how insurance companies really try to defeat your injury claim. How do they try to beat your injury claim? You know, Brad, I think a lot of people were surprised by the fact of how we covered. We started our show. It's a series of shows, the ABCs of how insurance companies try to beat our claim or your injury claim. But we started before the accident even happened or even occurred. And you really raised some interesting points on stacking. Maybe we should give the people a little flavor of stacking.
You know, it is a situation where you have to understand what you're doing when you're dealing with these insurance policies. You have to hope your agent's dealing with you. And the pressure that's put on agents to get insurance and that I think is put on their customers a lot of time to have the lowest premium, that a lot of times it's not explained what might be happening to your insurance policy. And next thing you know, what happens is that you're getting underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage only one time for, let's say, three cars or for three policies. When you get that policy, when you get that deck page where it says included next to the UIM box, to the uninsured or underinsured motorist box, you should be on alert, because included means that you're not getting that insurance for that particular policy. You're not getting another amount of insurance that you can stack later to add on to all your different policies. Instead, what you're doing is you're only getting it one time on what they would call the master policy. It's important to understand that, because you're putting yourself in a situation, if you're not careful, that you're not going to be able to get yourself much coverage. And I was telling people that, you know, it happened on my own policy. I have three cars. The minimum amount of policy I have is to $250,500, and I wanted $250,000 on each car, so I would have $750,000 of underinsured motorist coverage available. But when I got my policies, when I got my deck page, two of those policies said included in the deck page. Well, what that meant is I only had $250,000 coverage, not $750,000. And it's a big difference, and you've got to be careful, because nowadays an injury, something that takes you out of work, something that puts you in the hospital, you're not going to be happy with that lesser coverage.
No, you're not. And Brad raised another good point when we did the show earlier this week that's going to air tomorrow morning. A really great point that, you know, you deal with, if you have an agent, an insurance agent, you deal with the agent. And I can't tell you how many people come to us and tell us, well, you know, wait a minute, Mr. Bell, wait a minute, Mr. Pollock. My agent told me, or my agent promised to me, XYZ. They said ABC. Now the company's saying that's not true. And, you know, that's my agent. I trust my agent. And there's a lot of Colorado and other case law on the agency relationship and what duties they owe or don't owe to you as the insured. So why don't we open everybody's eyes, Brad, a little bit on that, because you're an absolute pro with that subject. I know you've done it a lot.
We do have a call. You want to take the call first, Gary?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, let's talk to JR. JR's in Denver. He's got a question about defamation of character. JR, how you doing? Thank you.
Thanks, JR. What can we do for you, buddy?
Well, defamation of character, can you define what that is and how that can apply to law? Also, on the Tom Martino show, Martino and his other guests, they always say, in my opinion, you're a scumbag. In my opinion, you're no good, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think about that?
Okay, defamation of character occurs when an individual is injured or damaged by communication that exposes him to contempt or ridicule. A lot of times, it's got to be careful because a lot of times opinions are not considered to be a defamation of character. So when a person is saying, in my opinion, you're a scumbag, that's a lot different than when the person is saying you are a scumbag.
Okay.
Expressing an opinion does not necessarily rise to the level of defamation of character.
So that's why they say that, in my opinion, then.
I think, JR, that they, I don't know this for a fact, but I believe that these people, everybody in the radio business has been taught that if you're going to say something derogatory, then say, well, this is my opinion and my opinion only. I'm not sure that's an ironclad defense.
I don't think it is necessary.
Yeah, but that's what they've been taught. That's how they default to, like a computer defaults to something. But the thing about it is defamation. You ask about what defamation is. It can be the written or verbal, and it can be verbal is slander and written is libel, and it depends on who the people are. That's a long, complicated. There was a case called New York Times versus Sullivan, which dealt with whether or not a newspaper, could comment publicly and how and when they could comment. So, but if you got two private individuals, defamation is a statement made about somebody that's not true, that defames and injures their character and their reputation.
Now, you can get into a lot of questions, Mark, and that kind of stuff, JR, because what you start dealing with is that what's the boundaries by which you can say things. And then we start talking about whether or not you have a public figure or whether or not you have a private figure, whether this person is in the public, because I think a lot of people sit there and say, how can, for instance, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton call each other so many names? I mean, look at the names that are being called, and so, the boundaries by which you can call somebody and the reason to call somebody a name or put a label on them is also expressed by whether or not you're dealing with somebody in the public and a public figure or whether or not you're dealing with somebody in private.
So I could say to somebody around this political season that Hillary Clinton is a crook. It's no problem for me saying that because she's a public figure.
Go ahead, Gary.
It's called a quasi privilege. Okay, so I'll get to your answer, and Brad will get to your answer to your question. It's a great question, by the way. So let's take it from the top down. Who has absolute immunity in this country can say anything they want to say about anybody else, and the United States Congress and all members thereof have absolutely immunity. They can say anything they want with no recourse whatsoever. Judges have absolute immunity. And they can say, because many times they have to say, I find you guilty of fraud. I find you guilty of murder, whatever. And so they do have absolute immunity. So then you break it down from there, top of the pyramid down, and you get into some other quasi positions, like New York Times versus Sullivan, like whether or not it's a public figure, what you can say. Versus a private individual. And so what's your take on this, Brad?
Well, I think you're exactly right. And saying Hillary Clinton's a crook or saying Donald Trump's a crook or saying Donald Trump's a philanderer, the question is, first of all, it's got to be false. And the next thing is, it's got to cause damage to the person that kind of comment right now, because you may be relying on a number of other statements that are being made in the elections, probably is going to be acceptable. But if you said that same thing about your neighbor and spread that same statement about your neighbor throughout the neighborhood, you're probably going to have a potential defamation lawsuit.
Well, the other thing, JR, I want to tell you before we go to break is it's really interesting because in this area, a lot of people say things knowing that if you don't like it, you're going to have to sue us. And I want to get to more on that in the break. Can you hang with us after the break, JR?
I can hang with you, yes.
Okay, great.
Okay, so we'll put you on hold. We're going to a break. This is the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about our new feature today. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and click on Live Q&A. And you can send us a message that we'll get on the computer. We can answer it on the air. I mean, if you don't want to call, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. This, we are injury attorneys in our day lives, but right here on this radio show, we're here for you, 303-713-8255. And if you don't want to call us live, we've got a new feature. We just launched it this week. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, right now, and you click on the live Q&A, and you can ask us a question, and it comes right to us, and we'll be glad to try to get to it on the air. If we can, that's championsofthepeople.com. Right before the break, we were talking to JR about defamation. He asked some great questions on defamation. The point I wanted to make, and I'm glad you hung with us, JR, the point I wanted to make is that many times people make these statements, you know, you're a crook, you this, you that, and they know that the person, if they don't like it, has to sue them. They know they have to sue them. And truth is an absolute defense to a defamation action. So if I say something about you, JR, that's true, if it's true, you can sue me, but you're not going to win because it's a true statement. The problem is this. People come in, let's say they come into our office, let's all go to law school, they come in and say, I want to sue Joe Jones, John Smith for defamation. And we say, okay, that's going to put your whole issue in character, in issue, your whole character in issue. They're going to be able to dig up your background. If they said you're a fraudulent businessman, then and you sue them for libel, then all your business dealings are discoverable, and they're going to go through every one of your business dealings. So most people, A, don't want to sue, B, don't want to open up their character to this entire investigation and intensive effort by attorneys.
Okay.
Go ahead, JR.
All right, that's all I had. But thanks for that, okay?
What you deal with, just remember, what you deal with is the First Amendment. And, you know, we have a freedom of speech in this country, And as the person becomes more of a public figure, the person holds themselves out more to being exposed to what other people think and what they might be able to label certain characteristics or certain character flaws or certain actions as being an inappropriate action or being something they can call, they can use. So, you know, saying Hillary Clinton's a crook, you know, because she's a public figure and our Supreme Court has stated that the public figures should be subject to robust debate and that there should be, you should be able to identify what you consider to be flaws. They can say that kind of stuff. Saying Donald Trump is a philander, and I'm doing both ways because we're not a political show, is something that is open to robust debate, and okay, the comments he makes, and that leads to people to be able to conclude that he's a certain type person. Now, if that same thing was said about you, JR, for no reason, you're not a public figure, and somebody just came in and said that, they better be a lot more accurate, a lot more truthful, and have a lot more basis to be saying that kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Hey, JR, thanks for the call. You know, Brad, following up on that, the New York Times versus Sullivan case is a very famous case, and it was the New York Times published some articles about Martin Luther King's, et cetera, in the old days. And I think they said that people had been arrested seven times, and they were only arrested four times, and they got sued, and then it went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. But that case established the point that when a newspaper or makes a comment about a public figure, that you have to prove they had actual malice and a complete disregard and reckless disregard for the true state of facts.
Huge distinction, because that doesn't necessarily apply to a private person who has not exposed themselves to public scrutiny or put themselves in public life. It's a hard thing because, you know, it's not the first time I've had people come to me and ask, hey, he calls her a liar, he calls her a thief, or he calls her these type things, and why isn't that defamation? And I'll tell you, it's a hard time, because a lot of times you think, well, they don't have anything to protect it or to back their statements. You wonder why they're not being sued.
You know, one more point on this point is that in the old days, and I heard the story, so it dealt with Frank Sinatra about him going up and putting, I don't know, a $5 bill or $2 in the middle of a whiskey glass and said, you know, you're an absolute slut, something like that. And so if as it's true, it's not defamation. But that makes the person have to sue Frank Sinatra, sue them, and then you put your whole character of whether or not you are or are not That help puts it all in issue, and then you get to explore your whole background. And most people say, okay, well, I got the fame, but I really don't want to go through that. I want to do that.
Okay, Gary, we have Mick from Cayo who wants to talk about non-disparagement clauses. Mick,
right.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm just curious if it can ever be enforced. I've been involved once in a lawsuit to explicit on the settlement and payment was non-disparagement, which didn't seem to stop it. Actually, it was confidentiality and non-disparagement was the phrase. And then after my divorce, which had non-disparagement, both times I've been told it's not worth trying to enforce.
Well, they can be enforced, and you can take them to court. How often they're actually, they result in some kind of recovery is a different question. Because, you know, when you get the non-disparagement clause, normally what you're going to do with the non-disparagement clause is go back in and get some type of restraining order that's going to, where you use the non-disparagement clause to seal the lips or seal the statements of the person that's making the disparaging comments. If you're talking about how much money is available, those can be very difficult to use that with regard to how much money you're going to get for the non-disparagement or for the disparaging comments that have been made.
And another thing on this point is, yeah, it makes it very difficult to enforce. And they're there, and some people go disparage you anyway, but they're not supposed to. So, I mean, you can bring a legal action. But, yeah, I think a smart lawyer would have to sit down with a client and say, you know, we need to explore this in detail. You know, you're going to spend a lot of time and money doing this, and do you really want to? And your potential outcome is the following, and one of those, the following, would be not good. You're not going to be able to do this, especially if it's a one-time situation. So, you know, if you put yourself in the judge's position, you're hearing this. Side A says they disparaged me. Side B says, yeah, we said that, but it didn't really disparage the reputation. And then the ultimate question, Mick, is, what damage did it cause? How much money? I mean, they said you were a poor businessman. They said you were a sexual predator, or somebody was a sexual predator. You know, what's the monetary damage? That makes it difficult. Not impossible, but difficult.
So,
okay.
Mick,
so it's just another throwaway clause in the lawsuit settlement then?
Well, not really. Let's say I am doing a case with you, and you've worked for me, or I've worked for you, and we have non-disparagement clause. You know, you say it's a throwaway clause because if I do say things, am I going to be able to harm you? And can you show the damages? And maybe not, so that doesn't help your lawsuit and it doesn't allow you to do anything. But what the clause allows you to do is go to court and get a restraining order. Now, that's important, or to get an injunction against me, actually not a restraining order, it'd be an injunction, to say, okay, based on this contractual agreement, Brad Pollock should not be saying things against me, and he is, and I want an injunction telling him he can't do that. And that's what the clause is going to allow you to do, because normally a judge is going to say, Mr. Pollock, did you sign the agreement? Did you agree to it? Is there consideration and all these other things? But determine it's a valid contract, and now you've got an order entered. Now, the next time I go and disparage you, now I'm in contempt of court. And now you can start bringing me into the judge, and you can start doing things to cause me to ultimately even go to jail, because if you violate a court order, you can go to jail.
You know, Mick, Brad's got a great point, because your first remedy is a breach of the agreement, breach of contract, you go to court. Your next remedy is a violation of a court order, which is a different remedy, and then you can go to the Crossbars Motel. And that's kind of how you do that. But another way to solve this is, if you put into the agreement to begin with that it would be hard to prove damages, it would be hard to prove a clause, a provision that says it would be hard to prove damages if you disparage us or me, so therefore we're going to agree in advance what the damages are going to be. We're going to say that you're going to be liable for $1,000 a day for all the days that this thing is published, or $10,000, or for every disparaging comment you make, you're going to have to pay me $50,000.
It's called the liquidated damages clause.
Exactly. Right.
Pretty tough to amend a divorce decree like that, though.
It is tough in a divorce decree. And in a divorce decree, though, you probably already have the court order. Most divorce decrees are a contract between husband and wife, but you also have a court order already entered, which the court says both of you comply with this order. So if you're having disparaging comments made by your spouse after the divorce, and you have a divorce decree that says they're not supposed to do that, you can probably go in and get an order from the court right there and ask the court to enforce it. And your spouse is in contempt of court for violating the court order.
Hey, Mick, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Look, we're injury attorneys. We have over 30 years of experience each helping injured victims put their lives back together again, helping the families. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information loaded website, and you can also find any of our ebooks there. They're an ebook. You can want a hard copy. You can call the studio right now. Our telephone number is 303-713-8255. We are your champions of the people. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. This is the legal show, the only show of its kind. We got Eric and Caitlin's, I think.
We do, Gary. Eric, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's going on?
Well, let me run by some specials with you guys. We're on our final week of our breakfast lunch specials. Now, that breakfast special is a pumpkin French toast. We're taking a couple slices of Texas toast. We're dipping it into a pumpkin spiced egg batter. We're going to cook that up to a golden brown, serve that with a side of maple syrup. That's our breakfast special. And then our lunch special is that ham and Swiss croissant. Now, we're doing ham and Swiss on a golden brown griddled croissant. We're putting a honey Dijon mustard that we've added a little brown sugar to. Really, really good combination. You can get our homemade chips or waffle cut fries for a dollar on the side of that as well. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $7.99. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. Cannot beat that. The weather is being so cooperative, so the umbrellas are up. The $10 bottomless mimosas are flowing. The TVs are on. You can come and watch your games. We've got everything you can imagine. Come down to Caitlin's and hang out with us this weekend.
Sounds like a beautiful day down there, Eric.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can't wait to see people coming on down and have a good time with us down here at Caitlin's restaurant.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll see you.
We got it. Thanks, guys.
Take care, buddy. Okay, Gary, let's stay right with the phones. We've got Dean, who wants to discuss that defamation a little bit, and then after that, we're going to get to Jim, who was hit on a bike by a car. Dean, how you doing, bud?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This show started out kind of as a First Amendment-type show.
Right.
There was a case. There's a federal case. I don't know if it's finished. It should have concluded yesterday. The city of Aurora was being sued by a police officer. His name was Kenneth Murphy. He sued his previous chief for going against him, making a First Amendment argument that he didn't get demoted because he took on the chief. And the policy was, you don't take the chief on here. And Murphy's argument was, well, it's freedom of speech. I can take you on. So he got demoted and didn't get moved up to captain, the chief. And then Oates, you know, went on to Miami. I don't know if you know, but he's a chief down in Miami.
Right. I do know he moved to Miami.
Yeah. So anyway, this has been an ongoing case. It should have concluded yesterday. I don't know if it did, but my question is this protected speech or not?
Well, here's what happens on something like that. And I don't know the inner workings of that particular case, but here's what you've got. You've got questions of whether or not certain speech is protected based on the circumstances in which the statement is made. And the reason I bring up the circumstances is, okay, what I can say or what somebody can say in my office to me or can say about me or can say can be completely different than what somebody can say, for instance, in the military or in top secret operations or maybe in the police department. And the question is going to be a lot of times not only what the circumstances are, but also what kind of rules and regulations have been published, what's part of the job, whether or not you can lose your job as a result of making the statement. Did you take that job knowing that these restrictions were being placed on you with regard to what you could or couldn't say? Gary, what do you think about
it? Right. It does depend on the circumstances, but there's things called defamation per se, and general defamation. And defamation per se carries with it a strong presumption. And the reason I bring that up is because when you deal in a work environment, when a statement is made about somebody, that affects their business, their reputation, their job, their business, then it's called defamation per se, and period. And it's more protected. If you say something about somebody's sexual background, and it's defamation per se. But let's take the business environment. So if a statement is made and it's about somebody's business, then this person might be losing his wages, his job, his career. Then that affects the business. Next legal question is there a privilege, some kind of qualified or absolute privilege for the person who made this statement to be protected? Because we say the statement was made, it affected the person's business, wages, living, ability to make a living. That's done. Next analysis is, was there a privilege? And that's what we're going over the top of the show, a qualified privilege, an absolute privilege, like members of Congress have an absolute privilege. But back to your question, so the issue would be, you made the statement, it dealt with the business, so is there a privilege, and was there a legitimate factual basis and reason to make the statement, and was it true?
Now, Dean, didn't this have to do with that the Swanson thing, that investigation? I think
it's fascinating. I'm not a cop. I just live in Aurora and paid attention to this kind of stuff. Paul Swanson was an officer that him and this Kenneth Murphy. I don't know any of the players.
Right.
Paul Swanson though had he was the him and Swanson and Murphy had worked together a long time, and then they moved up through the ranks 30 years later. Swanson gets in a bind for not showing up for work and being late and this and that and the other thing. And then he gets demoted and he appeals his demotion. And then Murphy is a division chief.
Testified.
Yeah. And he testifies and he disagrees with Oates, the chief.
Right.
And Oates says, look, you know, you got to get on board with everybody here. You know, this is, you know, you going against the grain here just ain't going to cut it. You got to change your testimony. And it's sworn testimony. And Murphy says, no, I just feel different about this. And so, Gates says, Oates says, if you don't change your testimony, I'm going to demote you. And so, and anyway, and the deal with Swanson's gone. Murphy stands his ground, and he doesn't change his testimony with Oates, and Oates demotes him. Well, then, so he's down at a lower level for a year or two, and then when Oates leaves for Miami, there's an open position for the for the chief. Murphy applies for it, but then the city of Aurora, you know, they all this looks at this and they kick him out immediately.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's why Murphy would sue, because one, he would have been a prime contender for the chief position.
Yeah, but you can't. It's illegal. You can't tell somebody to change their testimony. You can't do that. So that's a big that's a different variable into the defamation. It affects this person's business, but you can't say, you know, you got to change your statement, your testimony, or we're going to fire you. There's a lot of, I can't go through all the details about that, but there's a lot of causes of action that do relate to that.
And I think the fight that came on that is that Oates wanted Murphy to go in and say that he had not fully reviewed all the facts when he made his statement that he didn't think he should have been demoted.
That is correct.
And Murphy said, no, I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to stand by my comments. And then when it came time for the promotion, Murphy didn't get it. Murphy says as a result of Oates wanting to sanction him for what he said in the testimony. And you know, Oates at the very beginning was saying Murphy shouldn't have testified the way he did because he actually didn't have enough evidence and enough information on the facts to make the statement he did.
And that may be so, but even if he didn't have enough facts, he could still make an opinion like that.
Well, and that's what we're going to find out, because you're right. That hearing is just about done, and we're going to find out exactly what the law says about that, as to whether or not he can make that statement. It's a very, very fascinating case as far as what is going on. I think right now, the cases of what's been going up from the courts is they've sustained Oates, haven't they? They've been saying Oates was they dismissed the case, I think, in the lower courts, saying that Oates won on motion for summary judgment, that he was within his authority to make the statements he did.
But let's explain that, Brad, because on the summary judgment that you just said, so people may not understand. So you file a lawsuit, and the other side, the defense, wants to dismiss it as a matter of law. And so the way the judge looks at it is they take everything that's said in the lawsuit, everything that Oates said, as true. We assume it's true. Just for my purposes of my motion, we assume it's absolutely true. But as a matter of law, you can't recover on that. And then if I'm going to grant summary judgment, I'm going to dismiss your case.
But it was appealed, and I think I don't know the current status of the case. You think it just completed yesterday?
It was a week long, yeah. I think it probably went to the jury yesterday.
Okay. And actually, I think what got dismissed was a constitutional claim against the municipality for a 1983 action, and I think that got dismissed. And what's left is whether or not Murphy was inappropriately discriminated against by Oates, is what I understand.
Well, yeah, and Aurora, both Aurora and Oates they're being defended by the same law firm,
right?
But they're both defendants in this thing,
right? Right, and because it's not a 1983 action, but now they're talking about whether or not he was improperly dismissed. I think now it's talking about whether or not he should have gotten the promotion, and whether or not he has harm from the promotion, from the failure to get the promotion.
Well, and, you know, on the promotion, you can prove that there would be more prestige in the promotion and you'd lose money.
And more money.
Yeah, and that's one of it. But in lawyer talk, the way lawyers look at a case like that in lawyer lingo, that case has all kinds of, quote, Supreme Court issues written all over it. Some cases don't. That one does, because no matter who wins or loses, it's going up on appeal and probably writ of cert to the Supreme Court.
I got to believe it will.
Hey, thanks. I enjoy your show.
Dean, nice talking to you. We're going to take a break, and then Jim, you're next up. We're going to talk to you about that car hitting you. I hope you're okay, buddy. We'll be right with you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys in our day lives. You can call us at 303-713-8255. And in a minute, we're going to go to Jim on for his question about being hit on a bicycle. But don't forget about the Consumer Real Estate Show that follows our show. Barry and Larry, very professional experts in real estate. If you have a real estate question, call them. Hey, Brad, let's talk to Jim from Colorado Springs.
Hey, Jim, how you doing, bud?
Not too bad, thank you.
Good. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I was just bruised up for a couple of days.
Okay. So what can we do for you?
Well, my question is just that I was in a bike lane when she hit me. She pushed me into the crosswalk, and this was on 9/28 of this year. And her insurance company has done nothing to help me or make this better with me. So I'm curious, what do I do next?
Okay, well, specifically, Jim, what are you talking about? They haven't done anything. They don't pay your medical bills? What are you talking about? And we'll be glad to help you.
Well, my trailer was, I have a bog trailer, and it was actually underneath your car, and it damaged it. It damaged my rear axle to the bike, to my cranks, and to my pedals, and my handlebars were all smashed up. And I'm a bicyclist. I don't drive a car. I ride a bicycle, and they're dragging their feet. And I want to know what I can do about this. I mean, this is how I get from point A to point B every day.
All right, and was there a police report on it?
Yes, there was.
All right, and the police...
She tried to move my trailer, and I wouldn't let her. She was like an 82-year-old woman, and she was all concerned about her doctor's appointment.
All right, well, I'm not surprised the insurance company is giving you trouble, because they just figure you're not going to do anything, or you're not going to get a lawyer on your side. They figure they got you right where they want you, because they figure no lawyer's going to look at it because it's not high enough damages, and they're just going to give you trouble. What you're going to do next is we're going to call you off the air this week, and we're going to help you get this taken care of. Now, you know, the damages you're entitled to are not just the injuries to your bike, but you may be entitled to some damages as a result of the injuries you sustained. And, you know, the insurance companies on cases like this where they think that there are no lawyers going to take it, or they don't think there's enough high dollars that a lawyer's going to get involved, they think that they can just stonewall you and not pay you. I mean, if they said you've done anything wrong at all, Jim?
No, I was completely unclear.
there. So, Gary, what's your take?
Well, I want to tell you what. So let's just analyze this and break it down legally a little bit, how lawyers think. So you got hit. This lady was at fault. So she's liable. Her insurance company is liable. They have to pay you. And first, we're dealing with property damage, i.e. your bike. Okay, it's just like a car. They have to pay for the car. They have to pay for the bike. And forget your injuries for a second, if there are any, but forget them. They have to pay for the bicycle. And so we're going to help you because they should pay no problem. They should pay right now. They should get your bike or fixed or repaired or replaced right now. Now, your own insurance, car insurance. Do you have car insurance?
Yeah, I have insurance.
Okay, so your own car insurance, if you have some kind of property coverage like collision or comprehensive, that sort of thing, should pay. But there usually is a deductible for you, yeah. Jim. And when you deal with the liability company from the lady who hits you, there is no deductible. I'm just ready to jump on the bag one this week to help you. Let's get his bike paid for. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And it's just a matter of economics. And what they feel is they can get away with it. And her insurance company should be paying for it. There's no question about it. They should have paid for the bike immediately, and they should have asked to be contacted by you later on once your medical bills were determined so they could reimburse you for your medical bills. That's what her insurance is for, and there's just no excuse. Have they given you a reason why they're not cooperating with you?
No, they didn't even have an accident report on their desk when I called them last Thursday. They started the paperwork yesterday, and she actually asked me to go around to different bike shops to price the parts that were needed to replace for my bike.
I tell you what, we've got to put this on priority. They've just got you at the low end of the totem pole, and that's ridiculous. We need to make them see the radar screen with you at the top of the legal radar screen, period. And so we'll be glad to help you this week, but that's the legal analysis. They have to pay for your bike, and they have to do it now.
How long ago did this happen?
September 28th.
September 28th. Yep. I'm sorry, you did tell us that. So you've been without the bike and you've been waiting to get it repaired, or have you gotten the bike repaired?
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to be repaired because I can't pedal because the bottom bracket was bent to the point where when I do crank my pedals around, it throws my knees out.
Okay, is it something that can be repaired, or is it something where you should be getting another bike?
It's repairable.
Okay.
It's definitely repairable.
And do you have a shop where you would take it, or do you?
I have a mechanic that takes care of my bike for me.
Okay, and the mechanic already give you a price on what it should be?
No, I've been waiting to find out from them to see what was my next move, and then I found out that I just ran into a brick wall, and then I called you guys and asked for help.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what, you call the right show because, you know, and Brad's exactly right. They don't think there's enough money in it. They don't think you're going to do it, but that's what this show is about right here. That's what Bell and Pollock Legal Show is about. We're going to help you legally. We're going to help you get this thing paid for. And we're going to push it to the top of their radar screen. This is ridiculous.
So
I have another word for it, but I can't repeat it on the air.
So what I want to...
I agree.
Yeah, it is. So what I want to do, Jim, is... what I want to do is put you on hold. We're going to take your number. We're going to call you this week. We'll call you. It'll be early in the week, and we'll get all the information. We'll get the name of the adjuster, the name of the insurance company. We'll get everything put together so we can contact them and tell them this is what's got to be done. I would like, normally when I talk to somebody about damage to their car, to get an idea of what the damages are. So let's be ready to talk about that so we can get it taken care of. And what are you doing to get around now? Seeing as you are always on a bike, are you not biking right now, or what's going on?
No, I haven't rode in a week.
Okay.
Well, so I've been kind of asking my friends to take me from point A to point B, and they're, not liking that.
Let's get you back on the road.
Well, the other thing is, this is just infuriating because if you had a car and your car had to be repaired instead of your bicycle, they would have to get you a rental car during the time your car is being repaired or replaced.
I'm a legal driver. I have a legal Colorado driver's license, so I don't see why they're not offering anything.
How long would it take to get the bike fixed? Is this something that can be done in a couple of days or a week or how long?
Yeah, it could be a week.
A week?
I mean, it's just a matter of gathering the parts and getting the mechanic to do it.
Okay. Well,
it's the age-old adage of they're just going to think you're going to bury your head. It's too much trouble. You're going to go away. We don't want to deal with you. And if we have to deal with you, we're going to deal with you minimally. And or not at all, but now here come the lawyers.
So, right. So stay on hold. We're going to have Kevin take your number, and we'll get to you this week. All right, Jim?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim, thanks for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we have over 30 years of experience each helping injured victims, and we love doing this show for you. A lot of people ask us questions about this show. You know, we don't get paid to do this show. We pay money to do the show so we can do it for a community service, and we've been doing it for years, and we're glad to do it. And don't forget about our I think I'm going to make a note here to send Jim our book called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. And that book has a lot of information about Colorado insurance in it, because when you're hit on your you're on your bicycle and you're hit by a car, your own car insurance applies, but the liability insurance applies as well. You know, Brad, let's just briefly talk about our shows that we did. They're going to air tomorrow morning on how insurance companies try to beat or defeat your injury claim. The ABCs of how insurance companies try to beat you. Here's an example right here. But they try to do it before you even have the accident. How does that work? How does that work? Listen to our shows. They're going to air tomorrow morning and in the mountains a week from this weekend. I'll be glad to do it. So I tell you what, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. And don't forget, next week we have this feature. We have it right now. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Click on the live Q&A, and you can send Brad and I a question, and we get it right in the studio, and we can answer you on the air right away. If you want any of our books, just call and ask. If you want a free ebook, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and download it there. If you want an actual copy, just call our law firm. We'll be glad to do it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind, because we are your champions of the people.